large amount because of focus is on South African weather services. We welcome you and the team. And as earlier indicated, you are the ones who are reporting, would be listening at the end, ask questions for clarity, and at times substantive questions. The kind of questions we ask are informed by our background. So you'll have to respond to us the way we ask. The kind of questions we ask are informed by where we come from. Our task is to represent the people. So whatever we ask, you must know it talks to where I come from. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is truly reflecting our ability to represent our constituency. So that's basically that. We're asking questions and equally so learning from what you are doing and possible suggesting what can be done differently and for the benefit of the people that we represent. So that's all. Otherwise, we are all yours, Chairperson. You do your overview, and after that, then you can allocate tasks to whoever would be listening. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Thaba, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, and the committee members. We thank you for this opportunity to present our annual report. My name is Nana Mahomola. I'm chair of the board. I would like to tender an apology from our deputy chair who always accompanies us for these meetings, Dr. Philip Dexter, who was not able to join us today. I would also like to tender an apology from our now newly appointed acting CEO, Dr. Jonas Mpepa, who has taken over from the 17th of September. And of course, also then apologize that our CEO is still on suspension. And his case, the hearing starts this week on the 16th. I have with me here the team. On my left is a member of the board who is also a member of the Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Itani Paduri. He's a CEA. And, of course, Mr. Mnigeli, who is now acting again because of Dr. Jonas not being here, will lead the team in terms of presenting the report. And then also we, the CFO, will deal with the financial side of matters. And we also have with us the Executive Corporate and Regulatory Services, Ms. Julian Pafudi. We will be presenting our annual report, which has been signed by the Minister, Honorable Barbara Creasy. And we do note with embarrassment, after listening to the earlier presentation, that our report is qualified, but we'll deal later with how we are going to be looking at doing things differently later. We are a new board that started January this year, and we also have a new minister, and when we took over this year, we put together, we reconstituted our ARC committee. We now have independent board members and in the committee, because of the strength really, what will put it together for us. We have three members who are CAs. And when we were doing the interviews to bring them on board, we specifically asked them about the experiences of having unqualified audit, the experience of making sure that their reports are unqualified, and some of them actually have presided over clean audits. So we're looking forward to their experience and helping us to make sure that we turn the corner. We operated under a very difficult environment because our CEO has been out of office now for quite a while, and you know that tends to destabilize the organization. What gives us comfort is that South African weather services have had unqualified audits before. So if that has happened before, we just have to look back to see what was done right so that we can continue where they left off. We are honored that we are presiding over what I believe is a good organization. What's good about SOS is that there's a commitment to safety of life of our community and property by timely and accurately providing weather and climate information for all South Africans. Our employees are scientists who see their work as a calling, and hence they're dedicated, passionate, and are quite committed. Our clients are Eskom, who depend on our forecasting to make sure that they are able to provide for their power requirements adequately. Our clients are also those that operate in air, sea, and rail, and for them also it's important that they get from us timely and accurate weather information for the safety of their work and their goods. The farming community also depends on us, with us providing them seasonal data to facilitate crop planning. And as source, we are heavily involved in drought monitoring committee by providing them with short-term and long-term rain forecast and information. We are also one of the 13 globally. The Global Producing Centers, our center is in Pretoria. For them, we provide seasonal timescale forecasts, up to 9 months of forecasts. We are a learning organization because the majority of our employees are scientists, so our employees are continuously being skilled, and I've already spoken about them being motivated. And we are also a regional training center for meteorologists, appointed by the World Meteorological Organization. SOS has a good potential, and why we believe we have a good potential is because we are a technological and scientific organization, and now, that being the case, we have a good potential to produce postgraduate degrees, and that will contribute to the National Development Plan goals. We will be playing an important role in the implementation of the Paris Agreement and the Climate Change Bill, and also enhance the climate services in the country. Currently, we rely we're getting our funds from government. 50% of the income that we have is from government, and it is quickly declining. And because of that, we understand that we have to look for other ways of generating income. And one of the things that we're looking to do is to create weather enterprises that will specifically focus on the unemployed youth. We will be looking at climate digitalization and create new business opportunities to meet and compete with multinational organizations that are coming into this country to actually be in the same space in which we are. It is our plan to play a prominent role in climate change committees, and also to be looking into national adaptation plans. The other thing that we'll be kind of be focusing on in a really focused fashion is to deepen our relationship with disaster management centers and the local communities that are in the front line of the disaster. I will be handing over to the acting CEO, Nikeli, and the CFO to present our report. The team is here to deal with the questions that will come out of here, and specifically we will be addressing the AG's report and also to deal with the issues of how we ended up with the qualification. So on that note, I thank you and I'll pass over to Mr. Miguel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning, and good morning, DDG, and also good morning, colleagues. As you can see, maybe go to the slide before that one, please, Bongsen. Yes, thank you. This is the presentation which is summarizing the annual report that was submitted for 2018-2019. So I will be handing over to the CFO for the financials. And then members, there are also, just like Smangali saw, two slides at the end that we added in response to the call to unpack a bit the AG report. And then we just gave high level in those last slides with response to the details. But I believe they have been circulated. We made copies early this morning, members. The summary of the annual performance is based on the five strategic goals. The first goal, which is provision of products and services. So this mainly product services related to your forecasting services, your marine services, climatological services. I think the most important one is services related to high impact weather, where now we have started this year to move from just telling you what weather will be to indicate as to what weather will do. So we refer to that as the impact-based forecasting. That will also assist in terms of the response. And then, members, the second goal is capability and capacity development, which is mainly about our observation infrastructure, which are the foundation of a national meteorological service. I'm talking about your weather radar network, your lightning detection network, the weather stations, and then also your IT technology and capabilities, because the globe now, National Meteor Service have moved from IT being just a support, it's also a driver of the business. But again, the capacity development of your core skills, your meteorologists, your climatologists, your engineers, because the engineers are the ones that support the in infrastructure. And then the third goal, members, is engage stakeholders. Our main stakeholder being the disaster management authorities, because in our mandate, we are the authoritative voice of severe weather-related warnings, which is the key here is about the safety of life and property. And then the fourth goal, members, is about research and knowledge and intelligence creation, where our scientists now have moved in addition to applications of meteorological and climatological solutions to include agro and hydrometeorological solutions, so which are related to agricultural sector and also water sector. We are trying to participate in terms of contributing to water management while also contributing to responses to the impact of climate change and climate variability. I must say, members, we are truly recognized internationally. Each year, we seem to be improving in this area. Regardless of the challenges that we encounter on the way, we maintain our status in the continent and also in the globe. As we speak, from the 18th to 22nd of November this year, we'll be hosting a leadership conference where we expect heads of national meteorological services from 54 countries. As of Sunday, 46 of those 54 countries have confirmed because they see us as playing quite a significant role in the region. And then the strategic goal five, members, is the growth and sustainability, which is related to revenue generation. I understand why Honorable Modisa is smiling, because it's one of the areas that is a challenge. It's the area where we need to build capabilities, skills. The chair has just alluded to now the intent to establish a weather enterprise, because it's not easy to sell weather information, and also working with the scientific skills that you have. The competition is also increasing. We've got global players now coming to commercialize weather within our country. So we are looking at the weather enterprise, that it could be the key to unlock this area. Then responding to the last input from the members, we'll share the organizational structure at a high level, and then also we'll talk to human capital management in details. We've just have got figures, but you can still unpack there. I've got an expert here who can also assist. And then the financial statements, and then the auditor report with those just 1.5 slides that we added members. Going to the next slide, the performance. As you can see in Goal 1 members, we had 4 targets. We only achieved 3, and then 1 partially achieved. And then the second Goal 2, capacity and capability development, we had 15 targets. We achieved 11, partially achieved 3, and then 1 was not achieved. And then the second goal, which is stakeholder engagement, targets were 7, we achieved 6, and then 1 partially achieved. And then goal number 4, research and knowledge intelligence creation, which is 1 is zooming in the core in our science. We managed to achieve all the 3 targets there. And then goal number 5, growth and sustainability, 4 targets. Members, it's embarrassing. None is achieved. So partially achieved 3 and not achieved 1, but I'll speak into details into that one. So overall for 2018-19 is 70% achievement. I think it is the lowest if I look at the past 10 to 15 years. And then the second slide is just looking at the overall, now it's a graphical presentation. And then if I look now at the details, the slide for products and services, we had 3 sub-targets in that yellow you see there. So the main performance indicator is looking at number of community radio stations receiving products and services. So we decided now to focus on the reach because we've got so many products and services in our website. Some are also disseminated in various platforms. But then when you look at some of the vulnerable communities, they don't have these platforms. So the first target was to focus on community radio stations, which we were targeting 40. We achieved that one, where we got 51 that we are disseminating information through them. But the 2 other sub-targets in this were not achieved. The one is the 3 community TV stations. We were engaging a lot of them, but we only got 2 community TV stations on board. So we missed one there. And then the other one was the 7,300 mobile application downloads. We only achieved 5,571. So if we look at the deviations, members, for the community radio stations, you can see that we did engage a lot more, but it's just to get to that formal agreement that has let us down, and then we are down with 1. And then for the community TV stations, we're sending letters. We've engaged 5 community TV stations. But we could not get all of them. And the mobile downloads, the deviation there for non-achievement is that there was a very, very slow take-off in terms of the download there. We think it's because of these look and feel needs, because we are benchmarking with our competitors, and then we can see in what areas they are increasing. It's not about accuracy in this space only, but the look and feel it becomes important. We are working on that space. Members, I'm not going to take much time on the areas that have been achieved that are green, unless the chairperson would like me to also get into details on that. And then the second light, slide, members, can you change? The blue just indicates that the target was not available because it has merged with another target, so it's being addressed elsewhere. And also, we have achieved in terms of the five-year sector-specific markets. As you can see, the agriculture and water sector that I alluded to, they are the priority, but we've got energy as well, and we're becoming starting to explore in the sector. And then this other target I would like to talk to members where we said percentage of aerodrome warnings achieved, percentage of terminal aerodrome forecast achieved, because it also contributed to the AG. We made a mistake there. It's not smart. Your indicator is talking about percentage, but when you go to the annual target, it's not talking about percentage. I think we were caught about the fact that with the aviation industry, there are compliance issues. So in the annexa tree, we have to comply to percentages in terms of aerodrome warnings, and then in terms of TEF accuracy. The TEF is nothing else, members, is the forecast that is provided if the aeroplane is planning to depart from Cape Town, is going to Johannesburg, so hours before that, so that they can decide how much fuel to load, is there a possibility of diversion or not, so that if they might divert to Bloemfontein, they should be able to reach that. So these are set up in the aviation compliance, and then we have achieved the 95% that is set up in the aviation compliance. The next one, members, is just a graphical presentation to show that goal one is 75% achievement. And then goal two, capability and capacity development, members. The very first one is talking to the percentage availability of the radar data. And the weather radars, members, are the key infrastructure for a very short-term warning, because it's accurate, it gives you time, it gives you a place. If it's going to happen in Guguletu in 40 minutes, it's going to happen. If we say it's flash flooding, it's going to happen. So it's a very important one. But we didn't have a maintenance budget for a couple of years, and also our engineers, we had limited skills, which we've since acquired. But we've also, then when we have acquired skills and the budget for the first time from 2018, 2019, but it's between those 2 years. So what we did now, we said, you know what, we've got a budget. Let us not go blindly. We need to have a business case that is going to assist us how we resuscitate this infrastructure. So then the business case made us to make some decision in the middle of the year to decide, for example, to relocate the radar that was in Port Elizabeth to Skukuza, because it was a C-band radar that was vulnerable to frequency interruptions, and in Port Elizabeth there were so many of those. And then the one in George to go to Port Elizabeth because it has got a longer range. In George, it's hitting mountains. It's not optimally used, but also it can resist frequency interference. Then it can be used optimally in Port Elizabeth, and then we get one for George with a shorter range, about 100 kilometers. So those decisions, I think they were worth it, members, because as we see these 2 quarters that have passed, they made us to go to over 80% of the radar availabilities. And then the lightning detection network, I think, is fairly new. I'm not going to dwell on those. I'm going to the next slide. That is it's got Amber. Okay. So this is still within capability and capacity development. This one is related to employment equity targets, members. I think the members engaged on this during the previous presentation. So the first target was 70% blacks. So that one was achieved. We got 82%. And then the another sub-target was 1.5% people with disability. We have achieved that sub-target 2.1%. But then the last two, the 40% of women in the core, we were underachieved by 3%, we've got 37%. And I think both targets, the other one is 42% women in management. And then we only got 40%, we missed out by 2% there. But we've got a challenge in the science field as well much. We're trying very hard. But we have also changed our strategy, starting when we recruit. We go to universities, we go to other science institutions, and also our human capital management unit have got a program for a woman in core. So we think that through those interventions, we're going to be able to achieve. And then the next one that has got, are we together? Yes. That has got a yellow and a red, still under capability and capacity development. The indicator here is related to easily accessible, economically sound, fit for purpose workspace. Here we're looking at our head office. We're renting too much where we were in Pretoria East. The rent escalated. We ran out of space. So we're looking at the establishing of the head office. Which that sub-target we have achieved. Now we've got a head office in Centurion, in Echo Park. But the second sub-target was about establish two easily accessible regional offices. The first focus was for the Cape Town office, because even us as employees, it was difficult to access that office, and yet we would like the public to be able to access our office. So then we could not achieve there because we're depending on the construction that was happening, because there was a building of offices we're going to rent there. But that work now is almost complete. As we speak, we are trying to get finisher for that space. But for the year 2018-2019, we could not achieve that one. And then the other one is the establishment of source head office. Because renting office is quite expensive, members. And we've got a piece of land in a place that everyone would like to have a plot on, in Waterkloof. It's about 32 hectares, that one, honorable members. And then of the 32 hectares, I think 17 hectares can be used. So that is the piece of land that if we can use, we can build offices. Maybe you can even build for other organizations to offices to rent through a public partnership. But our planning there was not linked to the funding. We had ideas that that did not materialize, but we have since resuscitated that project. Treasury has also assisted us. The Department of Environmental Affairs, we also leveraged on the new offices that they have built in Pretoria, in Acadia. So we think we will ultimately establish that head office, members. And then the summary for Goal 2 is 73% achieved, members. If I go now to Goal 3, engaged stakeholders, I think most of the target we have achieved there. The very important one is also trying to reach communities, to raise awareness. And then the one with the yellow, which is now the slide on the board, the target is related to number of strategic alliances established. These alliances, we also want them to assist with the revenue generation. But here, we four partners were appointed so that we can assist in implementing our integrated service strategy. So we didn't focus on the target that we have, which we said we're going to develop a strategic partnership framework. But we thought, you know, we are desperate. We want to see results sooner. So that is also led to that target not achieved. So overall for Goal 3, 86% achieved, members. And then if I go to goal number four, which is about the science of our core business. We have achieved all those targets, 100% achievement, members. And then goal number five, members, the problematic goal, as we present today, is having no target that has been achieved. So the very first target, members, parliamentary grant funding, excluding SACIS, to reach 188.49 million. Already in the middle of the year, there was a cut, so that there was a reduction. It's outside of our control. It's again part of the failure to apply our mind when we put a target, because that is out of the control. And during the media mid-term review, we also could not convince the department to align to the cut. And then the other one is growth in a year on air aviation revenue. That one, members, we also don't have much control except to engage and also to influence tariff negotiations. So what happened for that one, the air traffic volumes were reduced. When we engage on the tariffs with the aviation industry, which is also mediated by a regulatory committee that support the minister, we had a certain focus, so we fell short in that prediction. So then it also led us not to achieve. And then the growth on commercial revenue, members, which is now we are talking about the non-regulated, because the aviation is the regulated one, hence we've got a regulatory committee. So the non-regulated one, we had a target of 32.9 million. We only got to 32.4 million, just fell short of 0.6 million. But in addition to the national macroeconomic situation that we mentioned, the other challenge is that our capabilities and skills in that area need to be enhanced. Hence, we are also thinking about how do we overcome this competition with private sector coming in. They can have technology. The look and feel of the product is different. It doesn't matter whether it's less accurate or not. So that's why the chairperson is saying we're thinking of establishing this weather enterprise. The last one in this area is about implementation of a revenue and pricing model, which we did not achieve to have that model and pricing strategy. Members, this one, there was a very poor non-response in terms of proposals that we were looking for. And then overall, it's embarrassing, members, partial achieve 75%, zero achieve, members. And then if I go to the organizational structure, members, we've got a source board as an accounting authority. As the chairperson said, the new board started on the 1st of January this year. And then the company secretary that supports the board. And then we've got a chief executive officer as an accounting officer. And then you will see on the right-hand side, members, that we've got a MET authority. The MET authority is an oversight responsibility. You need to have this unit that is looking at the instruments at the airport. Are these instruments complying? And then looking at our services and products to the aviation industry. Are they meeting the standard? As I said, aviation services, you have to comply or you get taken out if you don't comply. So this is the structure that you might see changes in the future, the MET authority. Because globally now, the MET services have been asked to shift this this responsibility or this function, because now we are the referee and the player at the same time. So we've negotiated with the civil aviation authorities. Our department engaged with the Department of Transport. There are principal agreements. So we are in the process now of moving that one to the Civil Aviation Authority so that they can play that oversight role over us. And then you've got four executives underneath there. You've got Executive Corporate and Regulatory Services, which is also hosting human capital management, communications, and then you've got your executive weather and climate services, newly appointed from the 1st of April. It was an outcome of the realignment in 2017, but since 2017, we didn't fill the position, so we only filled it with Dr. Jonathan Pepia from the 1st of April. And then we've got a chief financial officer. Then we've got the executive infrastructure and information system, which is about your observation network, your radars, lightning detection network, your ICT. I'm responsible for that one, members. Then in terms of the human capital management, members, we've tried to place it also in terms of the gender and also in terms of the race. So if you look at the top management, we've got two Africans that are male out of the four, and then we've got two females that are Africans. Then the total is four. And then the senior management, we've got seven African males, and then one Indian male and one white male. And then in terms of female, we've got four Africans, and then we've got two white males, females. So that is the area where is also the woman program is focusing on. And then professional mid management, Africans 42, males, and then colored Africans 4, and then Indian 1, and then white males 26. And then in the female category for professional middle management, 27 African females, one colored female, and then 10 white females. The total is 117. And then if you look at the skilled technical junior management for Africans, we've got 68 males, and then colored 6 males, and then in Indian 3 males, and then 23 white males. In terms of the females, we've got 8 colored, and then 56 African, 2 Indian, and then 14 white females. In total, 181. If you look at the semi-skilled personnel, for males, 49 Africans, and then 8 colored males, and then 7 white males. So African females, 47, colored males, 7, and Indian females, 1, and then white females, we've got 4, with a total of 124. So unskilled personnel, we've got 15 of African males and 4 of colored males, and then looking at the females, 5 African females, the total of that area is 24. So if we look at the total permanent, we've got 183 Africans, 22 colored, and 5 Indian males, and 57 white males. And then for females, 141 African, and then 16 colored females, 3 Indian females, 30 white females, with a total of 465. So our total number of personnel is just under 500 people. And then the next slide is expressing in terms of the percentage members. So the Africans, if you look at the national demographics, 81%, the baseline is 67%, and then the target is 74% up to end of March this year, and then our performance was 72%. And then in, for the white personnel, national demographics 8%, and then baseline 20, source target was 15, that was achieved, the source target was 17%. And then in the colored personnel, national demographics 9%, baseline 8%, the source target 9%, we underachieved by 1%. And then Indian personnel, national demographics 3%, then baseline 2, source target 3, we underachieved by 1% in that area as well. And then the foreigners, we didn't have a target, but in our science research area, we do have people there, The baseline that we had was 2%, and then we performed at 2%. So when you look at the persons with disabilities, we had a target of 2. National demographics 2%, baseline 2, source target was 3%. We have underachieved by 1%, as I indicated in that EE targets. So in terms of bursary statistics, number of bursaries for the financial year was 39 for full-time, 36 for part-time, with a total of 75. And then we absorbed 15 of the full-time. The part-time were already working for us. And then, members, I will hand over to the CFO now to take us through the financials, and also she will finish up with the AG finding part. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, members. Good afternoon. I'll take you through the financial statements. On the first one is the income statement. For the revenue, I have a comparison between the previous financial year and the current financial year. The revenue for the 2018-19, we had a revenue of 382.7 million, and that when you compare to what we had in the previous financial year, it's a reduction of revenue by 24 million. And the bulk of this is the government grant that has gone down from the 240 to the 209. And this mainly is due to the fiscals not having enough funds, so the department did cut the budget in the 2018-2019 financial year. In terms of the expenses for the year was 420. This is compared to the previous financial year's expense of 368, meaning that our expenses increased by 52.3 million. The major contributor to this increase is the salary cost. This is includes the normal increase, which was a 6.8 in the previous financial year, and we did have a parity exercise where we benchmarked the employees on the market, and we started implementing that salary increase. So that contributed as well to this increase. At the end of the financial year, we ended the year with a deficit of 68 million, and that is in comparison to what we had in the previous financial year, which was a 17. And yes, in terms of the PFMA, we are not allowed to really have a deficit for the year, but then yes, we did have that. I think at the last meeting when we were here, we said that we did put measures in place to ensure that we are able to manage the budget so that when there are any potential overspending, we are able to stop that. We have done that in terms of we have a new system, a new ERP system that we've implemented, and it will assist us in that. The next slide share that we have, it's the budget versus the actual. The one before that. This is in terms of what under revenue we had budgeted for 410 million. And we've only been able to recognize the 382, meaning we had a shortfall of revenue of 27.8. On the revenue, the government grants, I think the major contributor is the capital grants that were received from the department. We could not recognize all the CAPEX grant because we hadn't met the conditions of recognizing that. So we still have that. That amount will only be recognized when we spend the capital grant. In terms of our expenditure, the actual amount was 420. This is against the budget of 400 million, meaning that we have overspent by the 19 million. At the end of the year, we ended with a deficit of 68.9 against the budgeted deficit of 27, meaning that we have exceeded our budget by 41 million. Share the next slide. This is the first one is on the revenue. Our revenue for the year was 382. It explains in terms of the government grant, the one that I spoke about for the CAPEX. Even though we have received the money from the department, we couldn't recognize it because we haven't spent the money or we didn't meet the conditions that we had to do before we recognized this. The aviation revenue, the CEO did indicate that this one is dependent on the number of flights, and we had fewer flights than we originally anticipated when we did the budget. And Chair, on the other revenue, we have reduced the sale of meteorological instruments, lightning detection, and on that one we have, there is a slight deviation, but it's not major. It's something that we are working on in the current year to ensure that we are able to meet our revenue budget. The next slide, Chair, deals with the budget for expenditure item. We have the first one, this is for the compensation of employees, where we exceeded our budget. And we had for operating expenditure, due to the volatile exchange rate, we exceeded the budget for this one. And then the cost of the electricity and diesel, they were much more than what we anticipated through the budget, and we ended up paying more. Thanks, Chair. The next report, this is just the balance sheet. As for the balance sheet, we're still in a net asset position, so we are going to be able to continue as a going concern. From this, there is nothing that the members should really worry in terms of source sustainability. We do have the funds to continue at least in the for the next coming financial year. And even the obligation, we are able to pay for the obligations as they become due. Chair, the next one is about the report of the AG. We received the qualified audit opinion. And the main reason for this is under the property, plant, and equipment. It is the way that the useful lives, we reassess useful lives of the assets in the previous financial year. So on this one, it was mainly we did not agree in terms of with the AG in terms of how this was supposed to have been treated. And yes, we did that, but then currently now we are working on it to ensure that we are able to record our assets, the fixed asset register is revised to ensure that we are able to do it the way the AG had requested us that we do that. The same applies to the intangible assets. The commitments, the issue is the commitments. It was the accuracy and completeness of these, and these were mainly due to the fact that it's a manual exercise. At the end of the financial year, we have to look at all the open errors that we did and manually calculate how much the commitments were. So on these ones going forward, we have ensured that we are able to ensure that if we have a new ERP system, it's a matter that requires little manual intervention, and it should be as correct as possible. The concerns that were raised for performance information, it was the usefulness and reliability of the performance information. And then were the planned targets, they were not just they were not specific in clearly identify the nature and the required level of performance. Therefore, it was difficult for the AG to confirm the performance that we indicated in the performance report. Chair, the additional, we have done the additional presentations that were circulated this morning. That the presentation, it basically deals with the report that the AG tabled. The first issue that we had irregular expenditure in the annual financial statements. What we are doing now, we have requested the internal audit department to review and investigate these cases. And based on the report that the internal auditors would give us, we will be able to take corrective actions against any official who is implicated in that. For commitments, we have an automated system that is in place, and going forward, there will be minimal manual intervention, and that should ensure that the commitments are as accurate and complete as possible at year end or at any other given time when we require the information. For property, plant, and equipment and intangible assets, We have a fixed asset register that we updated. Our internal auditors will be auditing this to ensure that the asset register is correct, so that when the Auditor General comes at the end of the financial year, we have a completed asset register and we wouldn't have any issues in this regard. Regarding the performance indicators, we did review the indicators to ensure that they meet the SMART objective. So going forward for the 2019-2020 financial year, we wouldn't have, we don't anticipate any problems regarding the reliability or evidence that we need to provide for this. The next item that we have is the data collection. On this one, I think our data has increased. What we had done as source, we appointed the data collection officials whose job is solely to follow up on all the accounts with the with our debtors and ensure that these debtors, they do pay us. We have given them targets, monthly targets that they have to meet, and we are closely monitoring those targets to ensure that at the end of the financial year, we do not have a high debtors amount. The deficit for the year, I spoke about that. That's why we have a new ERP system, and we'll just be monitoring the budget to ensure that we are able to spend according to the plan. What we have done as well, we have cost containment measures that we've developed at source, and we will be implementing this from the 1st of November 2019. That is to ensure that we are able to be using the funds efficiently and that there's no wastage in terms of the budget. The other issue that the Auditor General has raised was consequence management, in that there was no consequence management, especially with regards to the irregular expenditure. What happened with the irregular expenditure that we had in the previous financial year, some were coming from the previous financial year. But as source, what we did for those, we did not do a detailed investigation as the AG had requested, because all the officials that were part of that, they had already left the organization. So it was decided that there is no real value in terms of us doing that, because in terms of us incurring that expenditure, we knew that it was for source purposes, so we did not really suspect that it was anything that was, there were no fraudulent intention. It was just that the processes were not followed. And then there are actions in place currently to investigate and to remedy the root causes of all the audit qualification matters that were raised by the Auditor General. And this will be monitored and reported to the board through the Audit and Risk Committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
That was the last one. I'll hand over to my Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What we'd like to do is we'd just like the ARC member just to add on to the issues in particular about, you know, the Auditor General's findings.
Okay. Perfect. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, committee members. excuse me. Thank you, Chair. I think it's safe to say that, you know, it's quite sobering, the information as well as the report that that we're presenting as the weather services. And in light of what has happened, the board has, as the chairperson indicated, that the board is fairly new, started in January. So in light of the outcomes of the Auditor General's findings and recommendations, what we have decided as a board is to put in a couple of measures in place to make sure that these kinds of things don't necessarily happen in the future. So I'm just going to speak to a couple of measures that the board is currently engaging in or is about to engage in as corrective measures to make sure that, you know, this portfolio committee does not have to sit with the same kind of audit report in end of the year next year. Now, speaking to, I just picked up a few issues that the AG mentioned in his report, issues around supply chain irregularities, issues around the lack of assurance that they got from internal auditors, issues around assurance provision from ExCo as well as senior managers, the issues around, one big issue was the issue of lack of consequence management at the weather services, filling of vacancies on time, as well as obviously the worsening state of affairs, financial affairs at the source. Now, in response to that, there's basically two main actions that the board has taken to try remedy and address those issues. Now, the first main action that the board has taken is through the Audit and Risk Committee is to create some sort of a dashboard reporting kind of approach, wherein all the audit findings, as reported by the Auditor General, are monitored very closely by the Audit and Risk Committee to ensure that the completion and the correction thereof of those findings are done appropriately and accordingly. And I can assure members of this committee that as the Audit and Risk Committee, these findings are quite damning, and we don't take them lightly. In line with that, you know, the dashboard is quite detailed. It's got issues around, you know, the details of the finding, what's the plan of action, what's the expected completion date, and to try at some sort of level of comfort again is to say once a finding has been completed or is deemed to be completed, the internal audit guys would come on board and make sure that indeed before the AG comes back and sort of like give us the same finding, the internal audit guys would give us a go ahead. Now, the next measure that the board has instituted, which I want to believe that it was instituted a month or so ago, obviously upon receiving the audit report from the Auditor General, is the board commissioned two high-level reviews through the Audit and Risk Committee, and the other high-level review is done through the HR committee, subcommittees of the board. So the whole idea of this commission reviews, members, is not to, obviously as a board, our role is mainly oversight. It's not to mingle with the day-to-day operations of the source, but the board deemed it important to actually try figure out the root causes of the AG's findings, because some of the findings that were raised by the AG were quite damning, and at a board level there was an urgent need to try understand exactly what went wrong and what exactly is causing that. And through the Audit and Risk Committee as well as the HR committee, these two high-level reviews are being carried out. And I can safely say to the committee chairperson that the reviews are almost nearing the completion, so much such that in the next sitting of the board, which is in about 2 weeks' time, and the Audit and Risk Committee, we're going to have recommendations, we're going to have findings, we're going to have detailed recommendations, as well as detailed timelines of when those recommendations are supposed to be implemented. And I must add, Chairperson, if you may allow, I must add the fact that obviously as a board, we cannot implement the recommendations because then the governance lines become fairly blurred. So ours would be to recommend and then hand over the recommendations to the executive of the weather services, and ours will be that of monitoring the implementations of those recommendations. And lastly, Chair, through you, just to say that we're working very closely with the Department of Environmental Affairs as well as Treasury as and when needed to just make sure that if there's any kind of support that we need in limiting these kinds of damning findings that we got from the AG, to just make sure that we're working with them closely. Chair, I don't want to get too detailed with the work that has been done, what are the issues that are coming out and all of that stuff. But I just felt it important that the committee must be aware of the actions that the board has taken in order to make sure that the kind of situation that we find ourselves in does not necessarily repeat itself. And with that, I think I'll hand over back to my chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We'll take it back to the Chair for questions coming from the committee members.
Thank you very much. We are taking questions from honourable members. So we start at the extreme end there. You are number one over there. Honourable Lorima, number two. I'll follow the line. Honourable Mbata, number three. Honourable Kanjo, number four. Honourable Modisa, number five. Can we start, Honourable?
Honourable Winkler.
Oh, so I don't call your name, Honourable Winkler.
Thank you. I'd like to know, how far is the impact-based severe weather warning system? What plans are being implemented or, I don't know, drafted with disaster management at local municipality level to ensure that you're working together to mitigate against possible loss of life and possessions, especially in very vulnerable areas? And then to lead into that question, the SAKI budget cut, how is this going to affect air quality management? Because I know that the department was picking up on where the municipalities were failing in terms of ability to monitor air quality. So that's where SOAR stepped in, but now if your budget is being cut, I'm not sure then how effective our air quality monitoring programs are going to be, considering that already we were unable to get a national air quality indication this year. So I'm very concerned about that. In terms of the data collection from our air quality monitors, are there any outliers? Is the data manipulated across an average? It has come to my attention that this often does happen. So that when you go onto the SAKI's website, what you see is an average, and this really doesn't lend to an ability to look for, you know, areas where there could be in excess emissions in excess, and for us to be able to address that. And I'm here in particular referring to the South Durban Basin as well. And I just want to also congratulate you on fixing the website. I did go back on and I did have a look, and I am able to get the relevant data on that. Then the individuals on the board that were responsible for the premature termination of the CEO's contract, I think it was Linda Makuleni. There was a decision taken by this committee that the board members would be held individually responsible for the $2 million payout. I'd like to know, have they been held responsible? Has this money been recouped by the department? And similarly, the last suspension of the CEO, Lenhoasa, was he also paid even though he was on suspension? And how, and to effect of how much was he paid? And will those board members then be held accountable for those costs incurred if indeed he was paid during that suspension period? Then in terms of the deficit of $68 million, which obviously means that your expenses exceeded your revenue, what in part was the biggest contribution to this over expenditure within the department? And then one more thing. You did mention that there was issues with maintenance of the weather radar. So you did want a very short time frame to issue severe weather warnings. But since there are issues with maintenance, what is the actual turnaround time now for severe weather warnings? Is it 40 minutes? Is it 2 hours? 3 hours? Is it 3 days? Yeah. Thank you.
Honourable Lorraine.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm a bit unclear on what charges exactly your CEO is facing this disciplinary hearing next week, and do you have any indication as to when that process will be completed? That's the first question. One hears all this and one's left asking, where was the risk committee in all this? Why was it not able to stop this getting as bad as it did? Now, I do hear that you've got findings coming out on all this. I do want that question noted, though, and I'd like to know when this committee will get those findings. Dr. Dexter's report in the annual report talks about several instances of fraud, corruption, and mismanagement. He says two of those have been finalized. How many instances were there? And how many are still pending? That's it from me.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I didn't know that we had another set of notes, which is the portrait in landscape, which we can read it very well. But this one, we can't read it very well. We are struggling. But I just want to request that whenever you write abbreviations in your report, please, in bracket, write it in full. Bear in mind that you must understand what is that abbreviation, so that we don't respond or we don't ask questions unnecessary. But on page 3 of your report, where you on community TV stations and mobile APP download sub targets that were not achieved, what are the corrective measures? How are you going to resolve it? Because it must be corrected in future. And then there's the other one on page 6. Where I'm concerned that the only target that you didn't reach there or achieve, it's of women, and it's the priority to us. What is your strategy on corrective measures? Because that must be corrected as soon as possible. And then there's another issue on page 12 where your complaint is that it's the grant. But what other revenue generation strategies do you have except those that you have given us? I think you can say, because you play a major role in South Africa, and you must try and get people who can assist you financially. But I see here your deficit is very high. Before the deficit, page 16, I'm happy you've got bursaries for young people. But I'm not happy where you just give them bursaries, then after finishing, you don't care. Yet you still have a shortage of specialists. That's what you said. So what is your retainment strategy on those? Because in government, when we talk government language, they give you a bursary and then they say maybe 2 years you must work in that environment just to pay back, to plow back what they've given to you. Then after that you can apply. But you must have a retainment strategy, especially on the skills that you need. You can't be training, but you don't have a retainment strategy. The overspending, I don't know, how does it happen? Because you're supposed to monitor internally how you spent your budget, and quarterly, it's done quarterly, and where you see that you are about to over use your budget, then you then call all your managers and you try and reduce how your things are working. Seemingly here, there's no monitoring and evaluation on how your budget is being spent. I mean, the deficit is too much. Although you say, CFO, we mustn't worry, everything is going to go in place, but I'm telling you, before the end of the year, the end of the financial year, you'll be complaining because the deficit is too much. How are you going to correct that? And my worry is that when I look at your audit, the audit findings from the AG, it's a lot. It's a lot. And you haven't touched it. You just make highlights, but it's a lot. I've got it with me here, but if I'm going to read it for you, it's going to be too much. From page 11 going down, because the AG talks about contractual commitment, properly planned and equipment, intangible assets. It talks about supply chain management. There's a lot, irregular expenditure, there's a lot. And you haven't said anything to us. Please, my request is that go back. Young men, at least you are with them. Just shake them up a little bit. Go back, sit down, look at the AG's report. And page by page, you can just take a photo of what I've taken here or with your phone so that you go back, you sit down, you correct them. And I think it's up to you now to make sure that they don't overspend, they don't underspend, and they follow all the legislative compliance. They must comply, because there's lots of non-compliance. And these are our black brothers and sisters, and please pick it up. Chairperson of the board, please be strict with them. There's a lot of things that needs to be done in accountability. And even if people are no longer within the service and they have cases that they still owe us as the South African people, citizens, that they must bring back our money, please, those cases must continue. And we were telling others yesterday to say, even a person is dead, because they were saying, that person has died. Even if that person has died, but that money must come back. Because let me tell you, public servants have got a tendency that they mess up here, they see that they're about to be found guilty, they jump immediately. They go to another area. And once you don't stop, that person is going to mess up in different departments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have a notion, Chair. Next time, you must give Honorable Mbata to be the last one to speak because she's causing a lot of problems for us. Chair, I only have 3 points. I just want to check how frequent do they service their stations, because in one of the pages, they've also mentioned the aging infrastructure, so that has caused a lot of problems, or that has contributed in them not achieving some of the goals. On page 6, Chair, I just want to check whether for them to attract scientists, do they have programs to educate kids from schools, not only on tertiary institutions, like on institutions of higher learning? Do they also have programs that is focusing on high schools or secondary schools? Lastly, Chair, on page 17, they have mentioned when they were reporting that they have overspent. I just want to know they've overspent on what? Because here, you see the expenses are too much on employees. I want them to explain to us what exactly are they, have they overspent on. Thank you.
Honorable Mutisa.
Thanks very much, Chair. No, I don't want coffee, thanks.
No,
oh, you.
I'm just hearing you.
Chair, I'm not too sure if a qualified audit report or opinion is also congratulated. Perhaps the chair of the board will tell us later. If not, hear me. Yeah, I'm saying I'm not too sure if a qualified audit opinion is also congratulated. You will advise us there. And I think it was a setup, you know, CEO. You were set up. How do you sit in the same boardroom where an unqualified opinion is presenting and you present after them? You were set up. I don't think it's fair. Or maybe we should have started with you and then got the good news, you know. We are even land almost, as you know. Yeah. He better apparently is we. Good. Che, I want to start with the mobile app downloads. They're in page 3. I'm not too sure, all of us here in this boardroom, how many of us have this app? If you were to allow us to raise hands, you'll be shocked. But it's because it speaks directly to the marketing and communication strategy of the South African Weather Services. And the CEO and the board and all of them, none of them spoke about it. The communication and marketing strategy. I'm not too sure how many other young people where I come from know about this mobile app. You know, where we come from, when you hear about South African Weather Service, you don't know about the detail. You think about that person who stands on TV, say, it's raining, that's all you think about. And there's lots of detail about on as it relates to the South African Weather Services. Now, I think we must improve on communication and marketing, CEO. But that's just a word of advice. Let's deal with critical issues. Honorable Loma has spoken about the issue of the CEO, and it's not for the first time we raise it. It has been raised before, so I don't think we want to raise it again when you come to Parliament. Let's just get the detail. It will be very important for us to understand on what are the charges of this person. What were the charges of this person? As in, when we are briefed on how far is the process of the disciplinary hearings and all of that, let's get an understanding so that we park it somewhere in our heads that this person was caught, was arrested, or there were allegations of fraud, whatever the case may be. Let's not ask this question time and time again. Now, in page, not numbered, oh, strategic goal 2, let's just go, capability and capacity development. There's a yellow area there, CEO, on the easy, accessible, economically sound fit for purpose workplace. The establishment of the head office. Somebody spoke about Waterkloof, and I laughed internally. I realized that this laughter was killing me, and I laughed externally. When you spoke about Waterkloof, all of us think about that arrangement of the lending. So, we I'm not too sure if you want to take us to Waterkloof. You want to take South African Weather Services to Waterkloof, but I'm more keen and interested on the building of those offices. Is there a budget for that, or you are still going to fundraise for the building of those offices? And what are the time frames to that effect? And my advice in that regard would be that we would rather be solution-driven and have a long-term investment. You know, if we're going to, you don't want to build a building for South African Weather Services with borrowed money, because the first thing you must do is to pay that money back instead of making money and generating income for sustainability of your own institution. Chair, the page 12. When the CEO presented there, he says strategic goal 5 on growth and sustainability. CEO, you said it's a problematic goal. You said so. I don't want to misquote you. Then I agree with you. It's a problematic goal. In its entirety, it's partially achieved and non-achieved. Why? How do? If when you submit an APP, clearly you are determined to achieve those key performance indicators. That is why you submit them there. But when you come back and all of them are not achieved, then there's a problem. Why did we submit them if we know we're not going to achieve them? Or we're just submitting them thinking that we can achieve them. But I'm looking at parliamentary grant funding, excluding SACIS there. It's partially achieved. The annual target 2018-19, 0.4 million. And I want to assume that you are saying the 182.8 is spent. Am I correct? 188 was received. Or 182 was received.
182 was received.
Oh, so 100 and you were expecting 188, you received 182.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about that red area, Chair. For a year, implementation of revenue and pricing models, and your comments there for deviation is that the finalization of the revenue model and pricing strategies for South African Weather Services was delayed due to non-responsive proposals received. This, my understanding is that this KPI must be achieved per annum. How many times did we really go to tender per annum? The Anapela is 12 months, full. How many times did we advertise this thing in a year? Are you saying our people are not really keen into these things of weather services? Or we only went twice to tender or once in a year and we come to parliament and say, no, our people were not responding? I don't think it makes sense. To me, it defies logic. We advertise in February. Perhaps you close in 3 months, whatever the period, you re-advertise again. Perhaps if you were saying to us it advertised 4 times, it would really make sense. But to say that you could not get the people who are meeting this particular guidelines, whatever the case may be, I don't think it's fair on the part of the committee. Just in passing on page 15, foreigners. I got interest there. What are foreigners? Are you talking scarce skills? I'm just in passing flagging it. The last point here would be in page 20. One of the honourable members here spoke about the deficit of 68 million. I think it must be hammered and overemphasized. That's just a lot. All of us here combined, our annual salaries would never amount to 68 million. All of us. It's just a lot. And my little understanding is that the PFMA does not allow this overspending, if I'm correct. You are technocrats, you are well positioned to understand. But I don't think PFMA allows this. I'm just worried. 68 million is just a lot. And this, when perhaps it's because the voice of the CFO is very soft. She came across as if she makes it very easy. You know? 68 million deficit. It came so easy. CEO, that's just a lot. And maybe she must change the voice when she mentioned 68 million is a lot. You know, it must be from that thick voice. And you have only 484 employees, including the temporary officials. Now, 261.3 million. You really earning, CEO? I would like to see the car you're driving. You know, when I come to Gauteng. I'm just saying, 484 employees, they are earning 261.3 million. It's a lot. Oh, we can't be investing such a lot of money on salary. And perhaps that is what brings the variance in terms of your compensation of employees. I want to assume, because if you are saying you had budgeted 255 and the actual money that you have spent is 261, and the variance is 6.2 million. So 6.2 million goes to who? Are there ghost employees there? Are there people that were paying who were not part of the plan, who were not part of the organogram, or are they, does it go to some contractors? So I don't think the balance sheet, the income statement and the expenditure statement are really speaking to each other. I'm picking up a bit of at this juncture there. So I don't know, Chair, how we resolve it. But over and above everything else, like I said, I don't know if the qualified audit opinion is congratulated, but we should thank them for this. The last, just on the audit, sorry, Chair, on the auditor general, I think it's 1 point, one or two. The auditor general, we met the auditor general office on Tuesday, and he confirmed that consequence management can be applied retrospectively. We asked him that question, and they confirmed that no, it can be applied retrospectively. So, if it happens that you choose to loot or do anything and run away, we can still follow you and find you. Yeah, that's what the office of the AG says. Now, it goes back to that issue of the voice of the CFO. She says that it is their conviction that there were no ill-conceived practices, as far as you're concerned. So this money was spent correctly and so on. Now, it compels us to ask if the internal audit could not pick it up when it went out. Because in your recommendations or remedial plans, you are going to refer some of the issues to the internal audit for rectification. Now, it's after effect. They are only going to pick it up after the AG has picked it up. What is the importance of having internal audit if they could not pick this thing up as it went out? But where is the risk committee of the board? Because it has a responsibility to provide oversight on the issues that are risk-related that affect the internal operations of the department. But let's just find those people, CFO. Consequence management, we don't want to talk about it next time you come here. That statement on the last block there, this one, it's very vague, it's naked, and it's dangerous. I don't think we must use it. It does not have clear time frames or deadlines. When are we going to look for these people? And whatever money that is found to have been misappropriated and misused, let it be found. And perhaps it will reduce 68 million. Thanks very much, Chair.
I also have to, because you are the last people to present to us, looking at what we have gone through, there are two entities that got qualified audit outcomes. Overall, if I were to say, what are we oversighting? The picture is not good. I can tell you. That's why you picked the excitement about Isimangaliso. So the picture is not good. And maybe what members have raised is just to emphasize that the budget is law. So you underspend, you are breaking the law. You overspend, you are breaking the law. So CFO, don't justify that. Well, the board must take the matter up. it reflects a poor planning, actually, without getting into all those, because we don't have that responsibility. Irregular, wasteful expenditure, CFO justifies non-investigation, which is a requirement by the law that you must investigate. She is saying on the basis of what you put into this in terms of cost, then I don't know whether she speaks on behalf of the board or for who, that they decided there will be no value added. That's out of order. The law says something goes wrong. The process actually is outlined in the PFMA, what must be done. Because you will not know whether you are losing or gaining without going through that process and closing. So even such things we don't want to hear, because there were some categorization of a department and other entities where there was no investigation. You fell under that category. So the expectation was for us to ask you a question. Why are you not investigating when people irregularly spend money? That's breaking laws. Where you have got wasteful expenditure, why are you not investigating? So that's the question that we were prepared to ask. So we are asking a question that we are supposed to ask. Now the response, it should get us worried, because the law prescribes that you should investigate with the intention of consequences. There are two specific, in fact, it's yourselves and the department who have given us a qualified audit opinion. And specifically, there were very clear instructions to say at times, irregular, wasteful expenditure is done deliberately. That's a view that we felt when we're going through all this. This is deliberate. Now, in the context of what is going on in the country, it would be wrong for us not to emphasize that. We want money. Money is not there. We want to deliver services. Money is not there. So any possibility of losing money out of these two, the last one is supply chain management processes. Well, I've not focused on, but with the department we're specific to say we would be very happy if we get into that, investigate what is causing people to flout supply chain management processes. If you combine all of this, the concern is resources. We want resources to be deployed where they are needed. If you want to know where they are needed, because we are public representatives, we know what people are demanding from us. So I'm sure even with South African Weather Services, you know where you would feel that money, this is where it should be used to respond to the needs of the people. So we just want to emphasize, my last point is where Honorable Lorimer was asking about the CEO. I think the question, more than saying what is going to happen when, in fact, the last meeting we had was a question of when are you dealing with this. There were days that were given to us. And I can tell you where I'm sitting. We are not likely to meet those. Because of information that came back after the presentation, coming from the lawyers of that person, saying they've asked for information from yourselves and that information is not forthcoming. So obviously there will be postponements and all that. So that question becomes relevant. And I think when anything gets presented to the committee, I think I don't know if you were ever told that you don't lie to Parliament, don't tell us something that's not going to happen. So I think I thought that message should go across, because when that person wrote to us, we forwarded it to the minister. So where we are seated, I almost can anticipate we are not likely to meet that deadline. So do whatever. I'm not condoning it now to say don't do it on the days that you agreed. Do whatever that you must do, such that you must not doubt the information that has been. You still have to respond to his question. But I'm just disclosing that information so that you know. We don't deal with such people. We refer such matters to the minister, who must then interact with yourselves. Thank you very much. Otherwise, we are better than when we started. It's your opportunity to make us even more better in understanding what you are dealing with. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the members. I don't even know where to start, but I'm going to deal with the matter of the letter that you received from the CEO, and I've got a response to that because it's quite specific. Suffice to say that, you know, for us, this is the most embarrassing NL report we had to deal with. My colleague here lectures on corporate governance. He's a CA, and he was horrified. The ARC committee was horrified about what they found. So we walked in here totally embarrassed, and we, you know, hanging our heads in shame. And all we can say is that from here it has to change. It cannot, you know, this cannot be tolerated. As a member said, that the chairperson has to be strict. The chairperson has to be strict, and chairperson will be strict, because this cannot be tolerated. Both of us have worked in other environments, and in the environments that I have personally worked, audits were always unqualified, and in some instances clean audits, so we know how to get that. Some of the things that we did when we walked in and realized that there are some challenges, I said earlier that we appointed, we restructured the Audit and Risk Committee to make sure that we can look at what the risks are and how are they being dealt with. So we appointed independent ARC members who are CAs, all of them. We made sure that their qualification is CA, but over and above that, they must also show experience that they have worked in environments where they have, you know, they've made sure that the institution gets unqualified audits and in some instances clean audits. So we know that the things are gonna change. There will be consequence management, and my colleague here will speak about some of the things that we've put in place. And it's true, people cannot create these kinds of problems and resign and think that it's gonna, you know, it's gonna disappear. It will not, because this is state money that has been used, and it has to be accounted for. Let me just speak to the matter of the CEO, and I'll come back to this later. The question was asked about, is he getting paid? Well, in terms of the law, when you suspend, the person that gets paid, so it's not something that we can change. So he is suspended with pay. The other burning issue is, what are the charges? We spoke about how we cannot get into the merits of this. The charges are very clear, and it is my belief that once the hearing proceeds, which is next week, they will be presented and probably will be able to speak about the charges. But for now, I'm going to ask the members to give us an opportunity to let this, because we're going to for a hearing next week. And next week, I can see the members taking it. But
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, can you just not tell us just what the charges are? I don't need any comment, anything else. I just like an idea of what the charges are. It doesn't have to be verbatim.
No, we can't. We cannot, because this once you start getting into that, it's going to really interfere in that case. And the last thing we need is when you... can I just say this, that say to the members that we know, not that we believe, we know we have a solid case. Because we know what the story is, we know what the evidence is, and we have and I really have to appreciate the members for really having allowed us to really just keep this thing until it's presented and the hearing goes on. Because otherwise, you know, really it's not something that we want to entertain. So I'm gonna ask the members to really to just give us an opportunity to let us follow the due process of the law. You know, in this country, the good thing is we've got laws that are effective, they work, and there's fairness on both sides. But fairness on the person who has those allegations against, and fairness in terms of the organization. So I'm going to plead with members to let us really keep this under wraps for now.
I just want to understand exactly I didn't hear about the content of whether there were questions about the content of the charges. I just want to understand. I see that hand and the other one. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if telling us the charges will put the case at risk, obviously we don't want that. But I'm worried that this thing is just going to get lost. Is it possible, you said the hearing was on the 16th? That's next week, Wednesday, right? So is it possible, presumably that's the first thing that happens at the hearing, the charges get put. So therefore, afterwards, would it be possible, after they're released at the hearing, would it be possible then to send them through to us? I'm looking for a paragraph. Is that fair?
Oh, no, don't respond. I still have to understand the other member. We just want to understand what is the content of what they are. Well, I'm not sure, because I've not heard you can say whatever.
Thank you, Chair. So, yes, you are legally obliged to pay the CEO under suspension. What I want to know is the exact time frame that he has been under suspension and the amount that we've spent during the suspension on paying him. We know that for the previous CEO it was $2 million, so I want to know exactly how much this suspension has now cost as well to date. Thank you.
No, that question becomes relevant when we do oversight. You see, because there are time frames as well that must be involved in dealing with discipline. So it can't be an open-ended. In fact, we are beginning to pick out that in the departments, people think they can, as long as you have followed the law, you've suspended a person, and it continues. So value for money becomes a relevant question. Now, the issue of the charges, it is correct, the chairperson of the board is correct to say we are the ones who must ensure that the laws get implemented. And when they are getting implemented, we can only raise concerns when we see that, like this concern, you're taking time to deal with this matter. And but after all, we don't get into this space where I was warning them, equally to it's when we hear that there can be postponements, there can be delays. So that's where, otherwise we'll see it in the paper. What are the charges, and we'll do nothing about them. It will help us to have a sense. But I think let's allow the process and tie them on the time frames they presented to us. I think I would suggest so. And beyond that, I'm sure we'll open up everything immediately you go beyond what we expect. I would suggest let's leave it at that. You can continue, Chairperson. We are saying deal with the matter, guided by the law, and we'll monitor that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to say that the matter will be sitting, as I explained, on the 16th, and the chairperson has made it clear to all the parties, because the CEO's councils are the ones that twice asked for postponement of the matter. It is not SOS. And the chair made it very clear that with or without the CEO on the 16th, without the CEO's council on the 16th, the case will go through. So that's the story. In terms of the letter that he has written to you, I have a response for you, Chair, that I thought I should bring it with an email, but I thought we should bring that with. Just want to see what else I need to respond to. It's done with the CEO. Oh, the time, well, he's been on suspension since September. I don't have the exact figures of how much it would be, but we can make that available. So we'll come back to you on that. Thank you. I'll let my colleagues add on to whatever I would have left, and then management also come back to respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've just picked out specifically three questions that were raised by members of this committee so that I can quickly speak to those. The first question that was raised was the high-level review that is currently underway as commissioned by the board. Will any outcomes of those be made available to the portfolio committee? Like I said, it's the reviews and the check, so to say, are at a fairly advanced stage, so much such that in 2 weeks, the recommendations will need to be adopted by the Audit and Risk Committee as well as the board. And I want to believe that there's probably no reason why those will not be made available, because the board, as an oversight body, will be monitoring the implementation as well as the attainment of such recommendations. So with regards to the availability of the outcomes of that investigation, I think that can that can be made available. And I think there's an interesting question that came up to say, when all of this happened, where was the Audit and Risk Committee of the board, as it was supposed to have picked up these issues? In line with what the chairperson has said, the board is fairly new, started in the beginning, starting to sound a lot like a stuck record. The board is fairly new. And as when we started, members, at least, you know, both parties are new. So when we started, Chairperson, there was a number of issues that the Audit and Risk Committee, as a subcommittee of the board, was dealing with, as you might or you may be aware of. And as a new kid, I want to use the word kid on the block, it would have been unwise to rock the boat before we got a handle of the issues of exactly where and how and when. As much as it took, you know, we're sitting with 10 months down the line, with the high-level review that has been commissioned is going to deal with that. And as well, the new ARC Independent Audit and Risk Committee members that have been brought to the Audit and Risk Committee, those have strengthened the capacity as well as the expertise of the Audit and Risk Committee in order for us to be able to swiftly and effectively deal with these issues. And hence, these reviews were quite quick. I mean, Chairperson, if I remember correctly, when you adopted the financial statements, that's when the board decided we need to run these high-level reviews immediately. And half a month, 2 months down the line, we are about to present the recommendations and the implement. And I must add, Chairperson, that the recommendations are not necessarily just some sort of a report that's going to go in some filing cabinet. The recommendations are going to be implementable, they're going to be tangible, and they're going to be very enforced. Like the member said, we need to make sure that we strengthen the hand, and that is definitely going to be done. We're going to break them down into, you know, short-term, medium-term, long-term. Short-term are those ones that, you know, we need to turn around very quickly to make sure that this situation doesn't happen again. And just the last bit that I'd like to speak to, Chair, is, or add to what my chairperson has said, is the issue around consequence management. And I think, granted, really, the issue of consequence management is a big thing in South Africa as well as, you know, SOS as a whole. And I think there's a few recommendations that are also going to come out of the process that we're running, as well as other POAs, plans of actions that the ARC, the board, and the UN and HRRC committees have put in place to make sure that, you know, if anybody is found on the wrong side, you know, especially in supply chain management, Chairperson, you speak to the issue of supply chain, anybody that's found in the wrong with the high level reviews, the recommendation and the implementation thereof will have to engage with this consequence management. So I think that should probably be all on my side. I'm going to hand back over to the chairperson, and then the EXCO team will answer the rest. Thank you.
Thank you, chairperson. Thank you, honorable members. I will start with the question of the impact-based warning system. What are the plans of involving disaster management authorities? We piloted this together with disaster management authorities for 2 years. So the implementation we are doing together, we have started in September as a collective with the disaster management authorities. It's still very much now at a national level and also at those areas where the piloting took place. So the plan is not source plan, it's a collective plan with a National Disaster Management Center. And the only success of this is when it is implemented at a municipality level, as you alluded to, honorable member. Because this is about the warnings reaching the community. The community understand the impact, but then they also need to understand what actions they need to take place, which is now where the disaster management authorities at local level are coming. And also we're slowly bringing in the social science part of it. So we are among the very first few countries that are implementing this. I'm hoping that as we come, we should be, I should be perhaps talking to the updates so that the members can have an understanding how far we are proceeding. The SACIS budget, the members, was not cut. The indicator is saying excluding the South African Air Quality Information System budget. So that particular budget was not cut. I must apologize about the data collection manipulation. I did not know about that, and then you refer to South Durban Basin. So may I investigate and come back to the members? It's the first time I know about this one. The maintenance of weather radars, the actual lead time for severe warnings, it's good, members. As we speak, the data availability of radars is over 86%. So those interventions have worked. That business case now has since been implemented. So the lead time of the warning system by the radar is always a very short one. If you've got an hour, that is very long. That's why when that warning is received, there has to be local disaster management plans in place so that people, they know what actions should take place. So it's also a part of the impact-based warning system implementation. Okay, we will address the abbreviations, members. I'm trying to look for abbreviations all the time. You know, us as scientists, we like abbreviations. That will be corrected. And then the community TV stations, radio stations, TV station not achieved. We have since advanced members. Those are our priorities. We've got a dedicated person who is doing this engagement. Maybe in the next presentation, we should update you where we are. I think that might put a smile at least on your face, members. The target of women, maybe my colleague who is heading ACM will expand on that. I try to indicate that we've got a program, Women in Management, but maybe she can articulate that better. What are the other revenue generation strategies? We are establishing partnerships now. I think we've got about 2-3 on board already that is yielding results because the weather enterprise that the chair mentioned is a medium-term activity. But we've got now those partnerships which are actually yielding results. The bursary holders for the SCAR skill, we actually for now absorbing 100% of those members, more especially in the forecasting area. I don't know if there is something that I misrepresent. In the part-time bursaries, perhaps maybe that is causing confusion. It's people that are within the organization, so they are part of the organization already. So Julia will assist me there if maybe I made a mistake somewhere. I'm trying to look at the technical areas that I can, the CFO is going to assist also with the land. She's currently coordinating that project. The mobile apps, members, poor marketing, that is true. The board have also indicated that. So we're putting together a communication strategy. But it also demonstrated that when they look at the content, we're lacking those marketing capabilities. That is very true. If we can go to your community, exactly, they won't know about this. Why? One other area that I think we should leverage on using it is media, because media is giving us space, so we just need to optimize usage just in a wise way. Okay. I think I've spoken to most of the areas I could speak to. I'll also pick it up as my colleagues are responding. I think the CFO chair should start. Yes.
Thanks, members. Thanks, Chair. Yes, we as well as management, we are not really happy with the results that we have. Yes, we have to present it as it is, but we're still unhappy. We're looking at it because it is not acceptable. And I guess even for myself personally, I've never had a qualified audit opinion. So it's something that we'll have to look at and ensure that when we come back to the committee in a year's time, we really have improved from where we are. In terms of the... I'll go from the irregular expenditure. I think that's the one that we'll start with. Yes, irregular expenditure, all of it has to be investigated. I think what I mentioned earlier is the irregular expenditure that was incurred in a way that was the mandate from the board. I think it related to legal fees that I think a firm of attorneys was appointed, but then at the time what happened, instead of going back either to the board or going to National Treasury, that was not done. Hence, from my side, in terms of what we're saying, that whether value was received by source, that one was done. It's just the issue of process not being followed. And then the employees, yes, they had since left source. But what we'll be doing now is just formalizing that process of investigation, because even though it was done, there was no report that we could really submit to the AG saying this is what was done. And at the time, they wanted an independent report that they could look at. And regarding, I think, the CEO's matter, I think the CEO's salary, as we have been paying him, and his salary is above $3 million. So we have basically paid him above $3 million to date. And then with regards to the deficit, yes, as per PFMA, we're not supposed to budget or even incur the deficit. What we did after the audit now, we have to declare where we have a surplus or deficit. So we did send a letter to National Treasury indicating the deficit that was incurred, the reasons thereof, and how we are going to ensure that going forward we are not going to incur this deficit. I think regarding the budget monitoring, there was budget monitoring throughout the financial year. On a monthly basis, we do have, internally, we have the management reports that are submitted to our executive committee. On a quarterly basis, it is submitted to various committees of the board and through to the board. The issue there was mostly in terms of we did not have an automated ERP system. So what was reported until the third quarter of the last financial year, we did not have the deficit that we ended up with. It's only when we started really digging deeper and looking at exactly what is being presented that that's when we saw that actually what we have been receiving as a report is not really a true reflection of the financial matters. And that's something that we are looking at now to ensure that we don't really end up there. And with the new ERP system, it's something that's on the system. We all have access to that system, so there's no room for misrepresentation or error in terms of doing the manual manual manipulation. So I think from that side, I'm confident that we have dealt away with that manual intervention, and the report that we have, we can easily drill down on the system to really identify where the issues were. And I think what really contributed more as well to the deficit is this capsule grant that we received, but we could not recognize it because we didn't meet the conditions thereof, which I think that one is a bit of something that we need to work on in the current financial year because it's not really linked to the expenditure. But then if we continue spending but we are not able to recognize that revenue, we will end up with a deficit, which is not what we're doing currently. And I think the members asked in terms of the overspending, which areas we overspend. I think we did overspend on the salaries, and mostly it was the parity exercise that was done in the previous years. However, when we were doing the budget, that approval that we granted to do the benchmark was not included in the budget because it came much later than the budget. The other areas where we overspend, it includes the purchasing of space. It includes the maintenance and purchasing of radio sons and upper air balloons, and all these that I've listed, those are imported into the country, so they are impacted by the exchange rate, and we know that the exchange rate in the previous financial year has basically been going down, so it actually impacted on these ones. And in terms of the findings, yes, the findings are a lot, but I think in terms of categorizing them, most of the findings that we have is the ones related to the fixed assets, the impairment and the commitments, and those are the issues that we are addressing. We'll continuously monitor as well. We have a dashboard that we present to the Audit and Risk Committee on a quarterly basis. But as EXCO, what we've decided, we will have this at EXCO on a monthly basis, and that's our way of ensuring that where there are any issues, we are able to address them immediately, not come until year end, and then we become aware of this. I think there was an issue on the Goal 5. Yes, the Goal 5, I think the first one, is the grant which was changed after we have approved the APP, so we couldn't change it after that. That's why it was not achieved. On the other issue about the pricing strategy, revenue and pricing models, what happened, we went out to the market to test in terms of trying to get the service provider. The process that was followed at the time, it was an RFQ because it was not estimated that the amount will exceed the 500,000. And when the bids came, none of those responded to what we had done. And then we went back to the market twice. And what we did, if we are to cancel a tender, okay, after the first one, we went out on tender. But, because knowing that we couldn't really, if we were to cancel the tender twice, then we'll have to go to National Treasury. So what we did, internally we looked at exactly, because it seemed, we thought it's something that we could get more people to do that, especially accounting firms and stuff. So we had to look at our terms of reference, where it was determined that maybe our terms of reference are confusing, people cannot really understand what we wanted. So internally, they had to have a workshop in terms of what do we need exactly, what kind of expertise do we want, and after that was done, we re-advertised the tender, but then with that time, I think what we did, we requested a compulsory briefing. That's when everyone had to come and clarify any other issues that they did not understand on the tender documents. And it's only after we did that now we got responsive tenders. But then it was late towards the end of the financial year. Hence, the framework couldn't be developed before the 31st of March 2019. But it is work that was awarded, and we have started working on that one. Thanks, Chair. I think I've responded to...
Oh, thank you very much.
...to the issues. The HR executive will respond to the one about the women.
Okay, I'm going to respond quickly to the one that relates to human resource. The first one was about attraction of students. We conduct a lot of outreach programs, especially in the provinces. I think in the year that we are looking at, we were about 50 outreach programs. So we go to high schools and we bring awareness to students on meteorology courses and training and what is it that they can be able to do it. So that, I think, is the program that we're doing very well. Then there was a question around absorbing of students. I actually wanted to just respond to it slightly more in detail. So on annual basis, we take about 40 students that we take to university. I'm just counting in all students that are currently at university studying a BSc in meteorology, about 40. Year on year, we've got about 5 to 10 who complete their BSc qualification. And a year after they complete their BSc qualification, we take them full-time to source to study what we call our internship, which train them to be specifically to become forecasters. As soon as they complete that program, we absorb them. There is no way that we can absorb them because actually we have a scarcity of skill in that area and a very serious scarcity of skills. But also we're trying to also increase the pipeline in the university so that it's not only this 40 and we add to that number, because obviously we are only training ourselves, but also we're training for South Africa on this area. And then the other program that we're doing is what we call the meteorology technicians. Year on year, we've got a learnership that we take for about 10 of them. Those are not from university. They are matriculants who have good marks on math and science. We advertise for it, and then we select, and we take about 10, and then we absorb them, all of them, those that have passed, of course. So we absorb all of them year on year. Also, we still have a bit of scarcity there, although it's not as bad as the one for forecasters. the programs where we don't take, we also have internships, the general internships that all organizations are running on HR communication, where they complete their own qualifications and in different discipline, and then we take them to train. I think currently we train them for 2 years in line with the legislation. Those ones we don't absorb them full time, so the number could be about 10 to 20 a year that we take, but those we don't absorb full time because of the nature of the internship in South Africa. It's supposed to train and then exit and allow the other new ones to enter the same space. So if we absorb them, obviously they it's going to increase our headcount, which is not supposed to be. And then there was a question about the scarcity and whether they are foreigners. Yes, we had at a particular time, I guess probably 10 years ago, we had about scarcity in research department of qualified researchers. And at that time, they were able to observe people who are coming from outside the country. And the intention now, or maybe subsequent years, the intention was to then gradually reduce that number and then replace it with a number of South Africans that are trained in those disciplines. But also to be able to do that, what we are doing is that we are encouraging our own researchers and scientists to register for master's and PhD at university. And once they're registered, we are starting to make sure that our policies are not very strict in terms of them being able to submit their thesis for PhD, because one of the things that were quite an obstacle is because some of them work shift time, and then they then have to do their university. But the organization was not relaxing their policies in terms of allowing that. Now we do have sabbatical policies and others, just to allow them that bit of free movement, and we'll continuously also ensure that space is available for them, because then that's what gets them into a higher level for researching in senior position in science, because they have to do research. Then there was a question on achievement of women. We struggled with this one for quite a number of years. But I think, the difficulty was that, so it's about 40% women, 60% male. And obviously, in the past, there's not a focus to develop women. But what we have done is that we have put a number of interventions to ensure that the women are exposed to functions and roles at higher levels, so that if there are opportunities, they are ready to do that. So we've got, as the acting CEO has indicated, an accelerated development program, which is very popular within the organization, and it was not aimed at actually academic qualification. It was aimed at just exposure. You know, you're acting very basic things. You're acting, you're attending senior manager meeting, you get a mentor, you've got a trainer, so that they are up, they are able to up their skills. So that is continuing quite very well. But also we have revised our employment equity plan, as well as the targets that we need to do, and also looked at the barriers to employment equity. And then we're planning also to put a moratorium on appointment where there are already over-representation, so that then we are able to focus on women appointments. It's almost just pushing it, but obviously trying to push it without fully developing them or getting them ready for those positions is quite disastrous. Hence, it will take slightly a bit of longer time, because they have to be ready and fully perform within those roles, instead of just giving them without proper training. So that's the programs that we're running, and thank you so much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Okay, the last hand.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I thought I should just make a comment at the end, as a departmental representative serving on the board, but also heading a branch that is at the heart of the work that SOS is doing. The South African Weather Service, as honorable members know, is a very strategic institution in the country. Very strategic as a knowledge center, but also strategic as a generator, repository of information related to our response to the challenge of climate change, how we deal with disasters, early warning. So it's important.
There's a hand at the extreme there. You can't hear.
Should I stop?
Sure. Would you like to continue and then I interject, or can I speak now quickly?
No, I don't know what you are going to speak about. She is responding to questions that we raised.
Yeah, now I'm saying there's one question that wasn't addressed, and that was the suspension of the previous CEO, Linda, and the committee's resolve that the board members be held individually liable for the costs incurred by that early suspension. I want to know, has that happened?
Noted. Okay. We continue here.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'll just proceed with the comment I was making. I'm mentioning this because the department has to provide the necessary support to enable or to strengthen the hand of the board and the executive management in dealing with specifically the areas as suggested by members of the committee. Honorable Mbata gave a specific directive of what the board must do with the executive. So my recommendation is for the committee to call back the board with the executive to provide an update in terms of what has been done on the various findings as listed in that report. I think in that session, honorable members could also then have the platform to get feedback on the implementation of the high-level review report that the board is working on, which is designed to turn around the situation at the South African Weather Service. That's my submission. Thank you so much.
You know, the specific question about the previous board members being liable or not and whether they've paid, this new board, we cannot speak to that because it is a matter that is, if I recall, it was between the minister and the previous portfolio committee. So it's not something that we can respond to unless my board members have any way of responding. We can't. These are our colleagues.
Let's go to the chairperson of the board is out of order. You can't come here and tell us that there are things that you can answer and there are things you can't answer. If there are particular issues that this committee is seeking clarity on, and in your view, the answers are in the office of the minister, that is what you tell us, that no, this we don't have a response on, it is in the office of the minister. But to tell us that you can't answer, it's out of order. Because once you take the responsibility of a board, you inherit all their mishaps and everything else that they represented in the past. Now, if there are questions that we are asking and they do not augur well with you, we are asking them because the previous committee did not ask them. But even if we are asking questions, Chair, that were asked by the previous committee, we were not there, but we are not saying everything else that they did was incorrect or incorrect.
I suspect the answer should be saying we'll seek information, we'll give feedback.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, can I actually withdraw?
Chair. Can I withdraw with apologies and say to the members we'll come back with a proper response? Thank you.
That then concludes the business. We're concluding this business on a wrong note. But that member in the extreme, she brought this question. We are all listening with interest because we also don't know. At that note, in fact, I think we have said we will be partners throughout these 5 years. And we said whatever questions that we ask, they are normally coming from our constituencies. They might not be what you expect. At times you might say, no, we came here for the annual report. We didn't come for that. Members ask anything. And you are free as well to say, I will still have to go back and investigate and give you feedback on whatever. But let's hope, one, the commitment that has been made by the chairperson or by the board, that you will not want to come here next time to talk about the qualified audit outcome. And that's commitment to work for it. It's not going to just happen. So we know that that's possible. And that's our wish as well, that we don't have to ask you similar questions as we proceed. We don't even have to ask you questions. Because one executive authority one time said, hey, I'm tired of these people who keep on asking questions when we are working. So by implication, he thought we are not working as a committee when we ask these questions. So I don't want us to get to that. I hope as we proceed, we'll ultimately understand each other, and the beneficiaries in the end would be communities. Well, that's what we are about. Otherwise, thank you very much. I know we have gone beyond the hours that were allocated.